Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Mark Himmelstein, president of Heavenstone. Most recently, as chief technology officer at RISC-V International, Mark contributed to shaping RISC-V technology through visionary leadership and industry expertise. He has a track record of executive roles at Graphite Systems, Quantum, and Infoblox. Welcome to the podcast, Mark.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So can you tell us what first got you started in this industry? You know, do you have a story to tell here?
Well, in the industry, I graduated high school and ended up in the dean of admissions. And he said, man, your math scores are really good and your English scores aren't great, which is kind of interesting since I've written 1,000 poems since then. But, you know, he suggested joining the new computer science department in 1977. And I did and kind of never looked back. You know, I've had some great opportunities. I ran Solaris for Sun. I did my own startup with Graphite Systems and got the chance to be the CTO for RISC-V International for 4 years.
Well, you know, RISC-V is all about the software ecosystem, right? So you should be at home here, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you notice that when RISC-V hired somebody to be the CTO, they didn't hire a hardware guy or a VLSI guy. They hired somebody with software expertise because I know things all the way from the bottom, like, you know, boot code or instruction sets, all the way up to applications. And we did a lot over those 4 years to expand our software ecosystem, including, you know, big efforts in the sort of the hardware software boundary, SOC, RAS, quality of service, security, compilers, and so on and so forth, and operating systems. So it was a great opportunity for me to work with folks. And it's kind of akin to what I did at the beginning of my career when I worked for MIPS, which basically was a chip design company, but also built systems and software. And so, you know, I got to be the software guy in a hardware company probably most of my career.
Right. Yeah. I was around back in the MIPS days. I worked for Data General. You know, back then, the computer systems, back then, the mini computer system companies, we made our own chips, right? So we had fabs.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll have to grab a beer and commiserate.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the RISC-V event next week and the panel that you are leading.
I've participated before for the Andes event, and it's really exciting. You know, Andes is an incredible provider of not just IP, you know, for a broad range of solutions. But they also have a set of, you know, software and design tools, you know, so if, you know, for example, visualization tools for performance and, how stages of pipes work and caches and so on and so forth. And they've been a great contributor to the RISC-V ecosystem and participate in a lot of the designs. And, one of the members of the panel, Charlie Su, runs engineering and CTO. So he has just been an incredible supporter of RISC-V and very helpful. And so this is an event that really is centered around Andy's customers, or future customers, and bring some of the best together of the industry in one room in Silicon Valley.
Yeah. So can you, I'll be there as well. So we can talk a little bit more there. But can you talk a little bit more about the importance of RISC-V software and the effort, you know, involved in the RISC-V community?
Well, I'll say a couple of things that really are succinct. You know, the first thing is that, without software, the chip's pretty useless. So, it's nice to have an ISA. It's much better to have software that runs on it. And so, because then people can actually put out solutions, whether it be embedded IoT, where you're running, a single application that's captive, or whether you're running a general purpose computer system that goes in a data center, and everything in between. But, you know, without the software, you can't use the hardware. So that's number one. But the second thing is software is the reason why RISC-V is a community, because people in the community get to share the effort of software. In today's world, even big folks like Google and Intel can't go ahead and do all the work that's needed to bring a new ISA into the world and make it useful for the community and everybody. It's a village, you know, and it takes a lot of people. And it's not like, you know, in the old days, you said that you were at MIPS. In the old day, or you knew about MIPS. In the old days, you know, you'd have 5 or 10 key applications. And if you didn't have them, you couldn't play in the data center. Today, it's 1,000 applications. You know, how many databases are there? You've got to enable that to happen. And so we share as a community, the RISC-V community. And by the way, I don't speak for RISC-V anymore, an individual, but the RISC-V community gets to share the effort of all the heavy lifting for everything from compilers to operating systems to boot code to virtualization to security, and that's the incentive for us all to work together. Otherwise, everybody be kind of doing their own thing. If they had to, you know, all do their own software stack, there'd be no reason to work together. But the thing that keeps us together, the thing that is the binder, is software. It is the reason why there's a community at all, because we get to share all the heavy lifting.
Right. Yeah, I agree completely. So give us a preview. What can we expect to hear from the panelists next week?
Yeah, you know, we had some meetings to prepare for this, and some of the questions that they're going to answer, I think, are the most intriguing for the audience. And that is, you know, what is actually available in software today, and what's going to be available in software, you know, over the next 12 to 24 months, and the players you have in place, you know, on the panel. First Charlie from Andy's, but you know, we have folks from Google there. We have somebody who's strong in virtualization. Somebody who's involved with Rise, which is the other project inside of Linux Foundation that's trying to expedite open source software development on RISC-V. All those people just come to the table with a wealth of knowledge about not only what their company is doing, but because they're part of the community, what the community is doing. And I think everybody's going to get a great idea about what can you do today, which is in fact a lot, and you know what is coming that everybody should be excited about.
Right. Yeah. So what do you expect the main takeaways to be for people who come and see the panel, like myself?
Well, I will tell you that, you know, there's always a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt. There's a bunch of FUD out there about, like, the readiness of RISC-V. But RISC-V doesn't require reporting of units out there. But by my last count, just anecdotally, I think there's in the tens of billions of cores of RISC-V out there, everywhere from, you know, IoT all the way up to these huge, huge AI based chips. You got, you know, two people out there, Esperanto with 1,000 cores on a die, and Inspire Semi with 1,500, and targeted towards AI workloads. I think the takeaway is that it's ready today. You know, almost every piece of software that you can think of either runs today or will be running, you know, within, again, the next 12 to 24 months.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I track design starts, or we track them here on SemiWiki, and all the design starts, almost every single one of them has a RISC-V core on it in some manner. And it's just amazing, right? Because, you know, 5 years ago, that wasn't the case. And I expect it to continue even up to the big data centers, you know, and the hyperscalers.
Let me just comment on what you just said, just so there's some context. There's been a renaissance in EDA over the last 15, 20 years, right? So, things like modularity and chiplets and all those things, have come about. And it's just really easy if you're doing a new design start, you know, even if like the whole thing isn't RISC-V, at least part of it is. I mean, you got folks like NVIDIA with like, I don't know, you know, 10 RISC-V cores on every video card and or more. And you've got Qualcomm who announced that, you know, like, you know, last summit that they were had already shipped over a billion RISC-V cores on their Snapdragons and more are coming. So I think that part of it is the reason that we do this and why we can do this is because, you know, the state of the art has advanced. And so, you know, it's easier when you're starting something new to go ahead and say, hey, you know, how can I take advantage of RISC-V? And people, are, you know, people go after using RISC-V for the same reasons that they go after using Linux. And that is, you know, it is their house. They created it. They have, you know, it may not be the best in all areas, but it gets better the same way Linux gets better. And if they need to change something, they can. There's no restrictions. They can do anything they want with RISC-V ISA, and none of the other big architectures can say that.
That's very true. So final question, Mark. If someone wants to get involved in the software effort for RISC-V, what advice do you have for them?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. I think, you know, people sometimes, you know, they see a train, you know, running at 1,000 miles an hour, and it's like, how do I get on? And there's two basic ways to do that. The first is pretty obvious. I mean, if you're interested in compilers or operating systems, there are efforts, you know, and there are meetings with the upstream projects. So RISC-V doesn't, you know, develop its own compilers. They're, you know, they work with GCC and LLVM and stuff like that. So you can join those groups. They have meetings, you know, monthly or even more frequently. And then they have efforts going on, and you can join either taking advantage of what other people are doing or absolutely, you know, stepping in and helping out. And that, you know, the whole community is always grateful for that. And then, you know, the second thing is there are now somewhere upwards of 70 technical groups inside of RISC-V. You know, and again, everything from, you know, defining things like matrix multiply to, you know, working on compilers or working on trusted execution environments or control flow integrity for security or, you know, quality of service or RAS. You know, you can pick the areas that you want. If you're an individual and you want to join in, you can join for free. You know, the way RISC-V runs is membership for companies and beyond are, you know, people pay for that, and that's how they run the business. You know, everybody gets to be involved, and even individual members have representatives both on the technical steering committee and the board of directors. So you can make your voice heard. You know, you can join in and help design at the most basic levels, or, you know, sit and listen and just watch what's going on. So it's a very exciting time. How many times in a generation do you get to create a new ISA? It doesn't happen. And so this is an incredible opportunity, a ground floor opportunity for both, you know, young students as well as seasoned professionals alike.
Great. Hey, thanks for your time, Mark, and we will see you next week.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.